Alabama team got some dope hair.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to go through the six games from Tuesday. We're going to preview nine games in the NBA for Wednesday, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on a young Kings big man, and that is Skal Labissiere. So make sure you're staying tuned for that. About halfway through the show, we've got lots to get to. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's start off with the monstrous line of the night. It does go to Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis had 23, 13, and 8. He hit a triple. He had 3 steals and 6 blocks, so he just narrowly missed a 5x5 game. Missed it by 2 steals. Was 8 of 16 from the field and 6 of 8 from the free throw line. He started off this season red hot. He was like the number one or number two guy for the first few 3-4 weeks of the season. Cooled off a little bit since then. Still overall the number 7th ranked player this season after being the 6th ranked guy last year. So hasn't taken as big a step forward in fantasy value as what we would have hoped. But he has taken a step forward in terms of on-court play. He's scoring an extra 4.5 points per game this year, up at 27.5. Still not hitting any threes. But What's reducing his fantasy value is the dip in his defensive numbers. He's gone from 1.7 steals to 1.5 and 1.9 blocks to 1.4. And that's why he's gone from the 6th to 7th guy. All the other improvements where he's averaging 27.5 and 10.5 up from 23 and 9, you know, those numbers should elevate him to top 5, top 4. But with the defensive numbers coming down, it hasn't been great in that aspect. The efficiency is still fine, 76 from the line, 54 from the field. Still shooting terribly on threes, shooting just 29% after being a 27% shooter last season. But has his true shooting up over 60? This is a guy who we know has got many, many years of great fantasy action in front of him. It could easily be the number one guy at some point. Could be or should be a consistent top 10 player from here on out. And if he starts adding those threes and can get those defensive numbers back up, then you are realistically talking about the number one type of guy. For now, there's just a few little holes that need to be addressed, but he's been fantastic if you picked him in that first round, which of course he was never escaping outside the first round. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Shabazz Napier of the Portland Trailblazers. Napier had 20 points with 1 rebound, 3 assists, hit 4 triples, had 3 steals, and was very efficient, going 6 of 7 from the field and hitting all 4 of his free throws. He was excellent earlier in the season, but he had been slumping quite a bit lately. He was scoreless in his last game, missed all 10 of his shots. In fact, his 3 previous games before this one, he was 5 of 30 from the field. If you go back even further, he was 7 of 36 across his last 4 games. So he's been very much up and down in terms of the scoring. He had that nice little run when Lillard was injured where he was putting up big numbers, and good play off the bench as well. And he's going to be a very interesting restricted free agency candidate heading into next offseason. He is going to turn 27 in the next few months, so he is, you know, well up there in terms of age as a restricted free agent. So this might be sort of the best type of Shabazz Napier that we're going to see. But on a per 36 basis, he's averaging 15.5 points with 4 rebounds and 4 assists. But more importantly for fantasy, the fact that he's getting 2 steals per game per 36 minutes, which is where really a lot of that value is coming from. The threes can be found in many different areas, but getting the steals added in there would be quite useful. He's very much not a high assist player. Over his 4 NBA seasons, the highest per 36 assist rate he's had is only 5.8, and that's obviously really minuscule. That was back in his second season where he played for Orlando. Really not a high assist guy, but he's taken his scoring up. His efficiency has gone up despite this recent blip. He's not really a guy that you should be looking at in 12-team leagues. A streaming option, sure, for a day like today, no worries. But more of a 16-team league player as a consistent must-own guy. Anything shallower, you're probably looking at streaming him in. The young gun of the night goes to Joel Embiid. Again, 23-8-4 with 3 triples, a steal, 9 of 16 from the field and 2 of 3 from the line. A few people ask me, oh, why is Embiid getting the young gun? Why is Towns not eligible? Why is Devin Booker not getting it when they're younger? When I do the young gun for you guys who are new to the podcast, it's a player who's in his first or second season in the NBA. Nothing to do with age. Maybe it should be. Maybe it should be retitled. In fact, if I'm going to call it young gun, not that Embiid's old, but it's first or second year player. So Towns won his fair share last season, as did Porzingis, as did Booker, all those guys. But yeah, first or second season players is what gets the young gun of the night. Embiid, we've talked about plenty of times. Just another stellar performance. Keeps cranking him out. He's got his efficiency up recently, 51% over the last 2 months from the field. He was down at 49% for the season, so we've seen an increase there. And the three-point shooting starting to come along, hitting 36% across his last 12 games, where for the year he is under 32%. So if that starts coming around, that pushes things, obviously, further forward for his fantasy brilliance, I guess, is a way of stating what Joel has been doing. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Shabazz Napier's teammate CJ McCollum was not very good in this game. 11-2-2 with a block, 5 of 18 from the field, and hit his only free throw. It's fair to say that he has been a touch disappointing of recent times, outside the top 90 over the last month, but still doing it while scoring 22 points. But why are his numbers so low? Well, last season he averaged 3.6 assists per game. In this run over those last 12 games, he's at 2.4. He's never a high steals guy at 0.7 in that time and one steal per game over the course of the season. And the efficiency, a big strength of his game last year where he was 48%, he's shooting only 45 this season and only 43 over those last 12 games. So when all those things that was propping him up as being this top 30 guy, which he'd been the previous two seasons, when those things start to fall away, which we're seeing with him this season, still scoring well, but you know, assists well down, steals still not going up, efficiency down as well, add those things in and it's causing his ranking to drop. He is the 47th ranked player over the course of the season. I had talked about him a few times over the past couple of years about how unsustainable I thought that high 2-point percentage was, and we're seeing that come to the fore now. Still hitting his threes, although recently he's been way off on those, but it's the 2-point shooting which has regressed a bit for CJ, and his inability to get steals, his lower assist numbers with other guys handling the ball more, say like an Evan Turner there as well, which Turner has impacted him since being there the last couple of seasons. We're seeing McCollum start to come back to the pack, and I don't ever think he's got top 20 upside in him. Maybe if he got traded to another team and was running point full-time, but playing alongside Damian Lillard in top 20 is a significant stretch for CJ McCollum, though. It's just those few areas in his game that do really put the ceiling on what his fantasy value can be. Let's get into these games now. From that's the wrong window. You don't need to see that one. Let's see. Apologies to everyone watching on the video as the wrong screen came up. There we go. That is the right screen. We're going to go through these games now and talk about them in a bit more detail as we like doing in this portion of the show. The first game, the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Huge performance from the Nets, who had a lead quite late into this game. The Cavs get the victory in the end, a quite high scoring game. Not really thinking that the Cavs problems have been solved. Maybe that's the best way of phrasing it. D'Angelo Russell looked great. 32 minutes, 25 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. He was efficient. He's not always going to be efficient, but his minutes are up. His production is fine, and he's got a legitimate shot at top 40 next season and is a clear must-own guy now. Spencer Dinwiddie, seeing his usage dip with Russell back in action, 11-11 in 31 minutes. Still needs to be owned, but we're seeing the Russell-Dinwiddie pairing working well, but it impacting what Spencer can do fantasy-wise. Caris LeVert, super efficient stuff, 18 points and only 9 shots, 3 rebounds and an assist, but only 19 minutes. He's just not going to see enough playing time to be useful outside of deeper leagues. While Rondé Hollis-Jefferson played 21 in a back-to-back, 14-7 with 2 assists and a steal. you know, it has to be owned if he was dropped at all. Damari Carroll, big minutes. I thought his minutes might dip. 16, 6, and 3. But it is going to be interesting to see what they do with that starting lineup when Rondé is ready to rejoin it. Who moves out? Is it Russell? Is it Crabbe? Is it Carroll? Is it Dinwiddie? Let's see exactly what they do there. As for the Blue Swimmer, he had 13 points in 32 minutes. So his minutes were up. Didn't do a huge amount with them. And yeah, again, I still think he's a fringe 12-team league guy. Well, Dante Cunningham got the backup minutes over Quincy Acey. Once more, Acey playing only 3 minutes. On to the Cavs.
LeBron James.
Triple-double for LeBron, 31, 12, and 11, and he now is averaging a triple-double over the month of February. Fantastic. George Hill's minutes, they're just all over the place. 37 in this one, 26, 3, and 5 with 3 steals and 3 triples. This is what I was excited about when George Hill got traded. I said, you got to go and add him, and then he played like 24 minutes, 25 minutes in those first couple of games as a member of the Cavs. He's been up and down, but he has played over 30 in 3 of the last 4 contests. And if he was on my waiver wire, I would go and have a look. Larry Nance, 10 and 10 in 26 minutes. Yeah, early foul trouble does limit him and can be a problem, but he does put up fantasy value in his efficiency, shot blocking, rebounds, and he can be a 12-team league guy. Jordy Clarkson had 14 in 21 minutes, while Rocket Rodney Hood had 14 in 31, and he is not a standard league player, Hood. The plumber, J.R. Smith, only the 22 minutes. That hot streak that Smith was having has significantly cooled off, and any value that you thought you might be getting from him, I think you can go ahead and drop him in most cases. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Charlotte Hornets and the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls traveling to Charlotte. The Hornets get the easy victory here. Zach LaVine was back, so Justin Holiday was a healthy scratch. LaVine played 35 minutes, a season high. Look, he is obliterating your field goal percentage at the moment, 37% on 19 attempts, 21-4-4 with 3 triples, and actually was pretty piss poor from the free throw line as well. He obviously still has to be owned, but there's going to be these sort of hiccups. Well, Chris Dunn was bad as well. 2 of 11 from the field for 10 points with 3 assists. Got those 2 blocks in, though, but overall not a great night from those two. Larry Markkanen was solid, 11 and 7, while Punchbob Shiploke only 23 minutes for Portis, 12 and 10 with 2 triples. Since that big 38-point eruption, he has seen his minutes cut significantly, with Chris Felicio getting more playing time. So Portis is still a guy to own, but if he stays in the low 20 zone, 21-22, it might not remain that way. David Nwaba, 32 minutes, 11 and 6, 3 steals and a block. This is what we're seeing from Nwaba, the lower points, which again is fine. It's the other numbers, the rebound, steals, blocks. And if you need that, he's obviously a useful guy. Well, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, another strong game from Denzel, 14, 6 and 4. That's 2 good ones in a row. The minutes are trending up for him. Let's see if they stick there. I hope that they do. I don't think you need to be rushing to grab him in 12 teamers though. Well, Chris Felicio, probably his best game, 12, 6 and 4. 20 teamers, you can pay attention. For the Hornets, Dwight Howard left in the first half, didn't reappear, we heard nothing at all, and then he came back to start the second half. Apparently he had a rib issue, ended up with a great 24 and 6 with 5 blocks, so he was fine. Kemba had 31, 2 and 5 with 6 triples, and Nick Batum was great as well, 10, 7 and 12 with 2 steals and a block. But some negative news for the Hornets, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist suffered a hamstring strain, he was out of the game. That means you need to go look if Jeremy Lamb is on your waiver wire. Lamb played 27 minutes, had 15, 1 and 5, and hamstrings, we don't know the severity, we don't know the time frame, but normally you're expecting a couple of weeks to miss at least for Kidd-Gilchrist, and in that time Lamb can be a top 70 player, and that's the sort of move you need to go and make, I believe. With Kidd-Gilchrist out and then Cody Zeller sitting out the second half due to a sore knee, Marvin Williams' minutes went up, he played 30 and had 14 and 5, and Bill Hernangómez, he barely played, only got the 4 minutes, so don't be expecting Bill to become this great option, maybe in very, very deep leagues if Zeller misses time. Frank the Tank didn't really take advantage of Kidd-Gilchrist or Zeller's absence, only 11 points in his 23 minutes. It was Trevion Graham along with Lamb who got the big bump. 28 there for Trevion, who had 7 points with 4 steals. We're only talking really deep league stuff, of course, with him. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Miami Heat, a bad loss for the Sixers, great win for the Heat. Dario Saric had a huge game, 21 and 7 with 3 triples and a steal, while Rashawn Holmes played backup power forward in this game with Trevor Booker likely to be bought out. 17 minutes for Holmesy, 6 and 7 with 2 blocks, but of course Ersan Ilyasova is likely back for the next game, and that's more than likely going to push Holmes out of the rotation or back to being the backup center depending on what they want to do with Amir Johnson. JJ Redick had 15, 3, and 4, including a missed game winner, while Bellinelli had 13 with 2 triples, and Marco just pushes himself into that conversation as being one of the best 3-point stream options, and that's it. Bob Cov, man, it has been bad. 5 points in 32 minutes for Covington, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals for Covington. Numerous questions coming in. You know I've been a big Covington supporter over the years, but the form that he's in at the moment, I think you do have to, if you're in a desperate times, you know, got to win this week, playoff type of mode, you might have to move on from him. He's outside the top 110 over the last 2 months, in large part because of really, really bad shooting. 32% from the field, 37 from the field and 32% from three. But the steals are down, the blocks are down, the rebounds are down, everything is down from Covington, and they're not, it's not all that a positive a sign. So if there's someone out there you want to make a move for, I think it feels like at the moment that Covington is feeling expendable. Benny Simmons had 11, 6 and 6. Definitely wasn't his best night. Onto the Heat. Dwayne Wade was fantastic, winning the game, huge final quarter, 27 points in total in 25 minutes with 3 steals and a block. But I really do question the intelligence of having a game where Dwayne Wade has a usage of 35%. And I know that you can point out, Josh, they won the game, he hit the game-winning shot, I know that, but it's about process over results. The fact that when Wade back on this team, he's leading the team in usage, is just piss poor. Him closing the games, it's going to cause problems. I don't understand why players, or I do, because they think they're the greatest of all time, and they've got to have that mentality. But there shouldn't be any situation where Wade is taking or has the largest usage on this team. It just shouldn't be the case. He's not the best player. He's not the second best player. He's not the third best player on this team. He stepped up today in a game that Wayne Ellington was out when Tyler Johnson was out, but that usage is just an extraordinary figure. And it worked fine in this game. The other games, it's not like Dwayne Wade had been playing well in these other games since returning to Miami. I think there's a real chance that his arrival here in Miami could muck up a few of the things that have been happening. Now, a lot of people ask me, do we add Dwayne Wade after this game? The answer to that is no. Again, it's one game, and things went really well. He had 6 points in the last game. He has the occasional scoring outburst. But in his time back in Miami, this is the first time he shot over 50%. This is the first time he shot over 45% in a game. He had a 35% shooting night on 20 attempts. It's another 35 usage. Another 37 usage night where he shot 31%. A 29% usage where he shot 44%. A 17% shooting night. Like, just bad, bad nights all around. He got lucky. He hit 2 threes. That's all good. All well and good. But he had been bad in his time back in Miami. So don't get overly romantic in terms of, oh, D-Wade back in Miami, it's all going to happen. I don't believe that's the case. The Iron Shoulder had 21, 6, and 5, 33 minutes for Dragic, while Hassan Whiteside, he had 15 and 11, had 3 steals and 3 blocks. Big minutes for him. Kelly Olynyk returned, and that meant that Bam Adebayo played only 7 minutes. I've been talking about probably dropping Bam anyway, and I think this is the impetus you need. I could say the same for Jim Johnson, who played only 16 minutes and went scoreless. Now, he could very easily come out, Jimmy, and put up some numbers. I just think it's going to be too much of a squeeze for him to get the playing time he's going to require. So he can be done with. Olynyk had 9-3-3, looked pretty good out there in his first game back. He's more a 14-team league player. While the Duke, yeah, hurt his thigh, and Tyler Johnson hurt his leg as well. We don't have any updates on them. Johnson was playing quite well, and he is a sneaky back-end 12-team league guy without being a must-roster player. Scooter Magruder also made his season debut after breaking his foot, 3 points in 9 minutes. I think when everyone's healthy, Magruder's going to find it hard to be in the rotation, but with Johnson and Ellington injuring themselves today, there might be an opportunity for him. But of course, that is real, real deep league stuff for Rodney Magruder. The Washington Wizards beat the Milwaukee Bucks. Otto Porter and Bradley Beal kept their form going with John Wall out. 17-7-2 with 3 steals and a block for Porter, while Beal had 21-7-8. And even Markieff Morris stepped up. He had a triple one. He had 14-4-4. Probably his best game in the last couple of weeks. I'm not running to go and add him based off this. Tomas Satoransky, only 20 minutes, did rack up 4 fouls in that time, and that's part of the reason that his playing time was reduced. Not worried too much there. He had 8-2-6, while Timmy Frazier played 20 and had 8-3-3 with 2 blocks. I think that Satoransky will be fine, so don't be panic dropping him there. And the inconsistency that I talk about with Kelly Oubre all the time was on show here. 13-4-1, a steal and a block for Oubre in 23 minutes. He is so up and down with what he does that it is hard to rely upon him. For the Bucks, Tone Snell played only 22 minutes, but he did have a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
I think that when Brogdon returns and when Dellavedova returns, he's going to find himself, you know, quite a fair bit lower in terms of playing time. And of course, he has very little fantasy value. Bledsoe had 17, 1 and 3. And Jabari Parker, aggressive again. 27 minutes, by far the most he's played this season. 19 and 5 with 2 triples. If he can push to 30 minutes or even 28 or 29 minutes per night, then he is going to be a comfortable top 100 guy. So while everything looked pretty poor to begin the season, the last two games have been an unexpected increase in workload and big increase in workload, and it's paid off well for him. Middleton 17, 6 and 3, while the Muppet John Henson only 26 minutes because both Tyler Zeller and Thon McCur played just more 3-center bullshit. It is getting close to Henson moving out of that must-own territory. In fact, I think it's probably there, and I reckon you can move on from him in a lot of cases. The Sacramento Kings and the Portland Trailblazers. Zach Randolph, there was, you know, talk on maybe Zach isn't going to play, he's going to be out. But not only did he play, but he started moving Skal Labissiere to the bench, and then he played more minutes than Skal. We also had Vince Carter come back in for 9-10 minutes, while young player we're looking to develop, Bruno Caboclo, was a DNP CD. This sort of bullshit is ridiculous. They got pumped again. It's not like these veterans are mentoring them in the ways of winning. They're getting their ass kicked pretty much every game. I don't understand. Randolph comes in and has 20 and 6, and you can go, oh, Josh, you had 20 and 6. It's literally not the point. It's not anywhere close to the point at all. It's just absolute nonsense that he sits out a game and comes in and starts and hogs all this usage. He had a 33% usage. It is just bullshit. It doesn't develop anything for this team. And I know that Kings fans listening to this podcast will agree. Well, I hope they agree, because it is just not the way you go about developing players. Budrick Hield was piss poor. 6-5-2 with 2 blocks in 29 minutes. But the 29 minutes is a positive, so keep holding him, while Labissiere had 6-3 in 26. And we're going to talk about Skull in the player spotlight a little bit later. Justin Jackson had 4 steals but didn't do much else. The 5-game week benefited him. He's played 2 of them already, so maybe you could move on if you've got those early 2 games out of him in a daily changes league. While Willie Cauley-Stein was strong, as was De'Aaron Fox, and Bogdan Bogdanovic was solid, and all those guys should be owned. On to the Blazers. Lillard had 26 and 12 with 4 triples. Really good stuff from him, of course. While Yusuf Nurkic, only 25 minutes for Nurk, but 17 and 9 with 2 steals and a block. It's pretty hard to complain about that sort of an output. The Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Al-Farouq Aminu had 13 and 8 with 3 triples in 27 minutes. So I guess veering towards the good side of things today, the efficiency wasn't there at all. 3 of 8 from the field and 4 of 6 from the line. Again, still a borderline guy. While Mo Harkless had 10 and 4. Again, a perfect 14-team league player, but not really a 12-teamer. The last game of the night, the LA Clippers and the Denver Nuggets. Just a weird and wonderful game. The Clippers were down huge, and then they inserted Boban Marjanovic. Boban went bananas. He had 18 and 6. He had 2 steals and a block in only 15 minutes. He had a massive plus-minus, and he turned this game for the Clippers. There's no denying that. He was fantastic. So, of course, I was inundated with, do we add Boban now? Clippers have a great playoff schedule. Do we go and add Boban? Blah, 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 blah. How often do we think that DeAndre Jordan is going to play 23 minutes a game? I would venture a guess that that's not going to happen often, that Boban's going to get this playing time. It's the first time he's actually scored a single point as a member of the Clippers. They've only had a couple of games since he's been there, but still, this is also a game without Danilo Gallinari, who, again, pushes in and moves into the rotation, pushing or playing at power forward. So you've got him, you've got Jordan, you've got Harrell, and then there's Boban, there's Harris, there's Wes Johnson. Like, he fits into that mix. So yeah, 18 and 6 in 15 minutes is great, but there's a reason every single person on Twitter was talking about just how great it was, is the fact that it's just unlikely that someone puts up those numbers in those minutes. And I know Boban's a per minute beast, I'm well aware of that. But I just think that we're not going to see 23 minutes for DeAndre Jordan. in games. That's just not going to happen. Gallinari is going to return. Avery Bradley at some point is going to return. And Boban's going to go back to being two-minute cameo performances, the occasional game like this. It's definitely not something to overreact to. Lou Williams, 25, 5 and 6 with two steals and a block. He was great. While Milosz got his minutes back up, 27 for Teodosic, 11, 4 and 5 with two steals. More of a streamer and a deeper league guy though, because Austin Rivers actually played fewer minutes, which was great. 29 minutes, 17 and 4 with a steal and a block. While Ty, the list manager, Wallace had 16, 2 and 5 in his 31 minutes. And while Bradley is out, Wallace does have some marginal 12 team league appeal. I wouldn't go as far as saying that he is a must-own player. Toby Harris also fairly shithouse in this one. 8-6 in 29 minutes with two blocks. And we saw that giving more minutes to the table. Montrezl Harrell, who played alongside Boban for long stretches there. Harrell had 15-4. He puts up numbers whenever he plays. I think he's fine as a 14-team league guy anyway. And again, it's not for Boban to start getting 20 minutes a night, they'd have to take Harrell pretty much out of the rotation. And Harrell has been good every single night, so I'm just not sure that that's going to be something that that does happen. On the Nuggets side of things, Paul Millsap did return, 23 minutes, 9-7, a steal and two blocks, but just the absolute confusion that Dr. Malone throws out there all the time continues to infuriate me. Farton Wilbarton is just a pain to watch, 19-7-5 with two blocks. Those stats are really sexy, but he played 14 minutes. Of course, Malone started calling more plays, taking the ball out of the hands of Jokic, who didn't have a single field goal attempt in the first half. He ended with 18-6-4, Nikola, two threes, a steal and a block. But having your best player not take a single shot in the first half, it was infuriating. He also closed the game with Plumlee and Jokic. And then when it came time to take one of them off, he took off Jokic. I just can't. And this is when they were down. I cannot understand for the life of me the decisions that this guy makes. Gaz Harris had 23, 2 and 1 with 3 steals and 4 triples, while Wilson Chandler had 18, 8 and 6, and the Blue Arrow had 18, 2 and 5. It's going to be very interesting. Jokic was sort of out of sorts when playing with Millsap earlier in the season. The offense was all over the place. And Malone, this is the thing, Malone admits it. I was trying to call too many plays. We had the number one offense last season. We should just go back to that. And then Millsap returns and he does the same shit again. Like, just let Jokic run everything. Yeah, it's so like, hey, I did it last season. It worked. I went away from it inexplicably. To start the season, it didn't work. I went back to it. It worked. So what in anyone's head would make them go, oh, you know that thing that's never worked before and then there's that thing that always works? Why don't we do the thing that doesn't work? Like, what kind of logic thought process is this? We will see how this all unfolds, but definitely not a good start for this Nuggets team, losing a very easily winnable game against the Clippers at home with a big lead. With some questionable coaching and some questionable playing, to be honest. There weren't great performances all round, but really some questionable things from Malone and the coaching staff once more. All right, let's go into the player spotlight now. And I said we are going to Sacramento, and we're going to be talking about Skal Labissiere, the second-year big man of the Kings. He was a guy that put together a pretty nice run at the end of last season. Overall, his numbers weren't great, but towards the end of the year, he was putting up big numbers. He had a 19-3 game, a 25-6 game. He had a big 32-11 game against Phoenix. He was inconsistent. The minutes were inconsistent. Shout out to Dave Yeager, of course. But we thought, heading into this season, there's a chance that they really start to see what they've got. Well, he has been dicked around pretty much all season. He was sent to the G League. He was taken out of the rotation. Just stuff that is bafflingly poor in terms of coaching. And even last game, he played 31 minutes and had 20 points. So therefore, his reward for playing that well is to come off the bench and play fewer minutes than a 37-year-old man who can't jump. And that's Zach Randolph. But what do we think about Labissiere moving forward? He was a guy that we know was the number one rated player in his high school class ahead of Ben Simmons, had a disappointing season at Kentucky and fell all the way down. I would have taken him much higher than what he actually went in the draft. And we saw some flashes of that from Skal. He can handle the ball a little bit. He can block some shots. And his numbers this season, they haven't been bad. But It has been a decline in numerous areas over his rookie year. He's averaging fewer points per 36 minutes. He's averaging fewer rebounds. He's averaging, or he's shooting a worse percentage, down from 54 to 46% from the field. And his true shooting has dropped from 58 to 52. It's impossible for me to judge how much of that is confidence related, how much of that is the shoulder injury. But I think it would be foolish to discount the management of this roster as not having some sort of an impact on what Le Bissier has been able to do this in his second season. His advanced numbers, they're okay, like above average PER, 15.3 this year, 16.8 last year. The other stuff, the defensive box score plus minus is solid. Not great for a big man, but it's solid. But he does still struggle in numerous areas. But the team is 5.8 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than on the bench. And that's saying something for a big man of his, youth and inexperience. It also helps that the bloke who's in front of him is a team worse than that Zach Randolph in terms of on-off numbers. Skell is going to be heading into a really critical third season, a season when many players take a big jump forward, same as the fourth year. The third and fourth years are really key. What they do with this front court, do they finally say, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to play 29 minutes and 35% usage to a 37-year-old Zach Randolph? Will Dave Yeager ever think that? Probably not, because he's a stubborn, stubborn man. But there is a big chance for Skell to be a top 70 player. Now, will he ever become a top 30, top 40 guy? I have my doubts. Averaging only 15.5 and 8.5 per 36 minutes, only 1.3 blocks, 1.7 assists, half a three, middling efficiency. Now, he can become a 50% shooter. He can become a 35% three-point shooter. He can average, I'd say, in a best-case scenario, he could average 16 points per game with 16 and 9 with 1.6 blocks. 2.5 assists. I think that's a best case scenario for Le Bissier. It's not a best case scenario for this season, but I'm talking about season 5, season 6 in his NBA career. I think that he will be another guy that is going to take a step forward next season and should find himself as a must-own player. And in fact, for the rest of this season, I do think he's a must-own player. But the dicking around that he copped today at the hands of Yeager does give me some pause, because if you're going to play him 31 one night and he plays well, and then you're going to demote him and play him fewer minutes, that's a real problem in terms of confidence and in terms of what his season-long role can be. But for now, I believe that Le Bissier is a must-own player for the rest of this season, with some upside to get better over the course of the next couple of years. But I just don't think he's really ever got that absolute elite upside that we hope from players, or hope to hit on those guys in dynasty type formats. Let's look at the the perfect DFS lineups. That's where we're up to. On FanDuel, Georgie Hill 45.1 and De'Aaron Fox 33.1. The old Kings backcourt pairing up there. Dwayne Wade 39.7 and Lou Williams 47. At small forward, LeBron 63.9 and Yanni at 72.6. Eddie Davis had 27.9 and Mace Plumlee had 30.8. While at center, Hassan Whiteside had 48.7 for a total of 408.8. And that cost $59,800. On DraftKings, Dwayne Wade had 37.75, Georgie Hill 44.25, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler had 38.5, Chris Felizio 26.5, Boban had 31.5, Nick Batum had 43.25, LeBron 69.5, and Yanni had 68.75 for a total of 360 points, and that cost $49,900. All right, let's move on to a 9-game Wednesday. In the NBA, we will start by looking at the Milwaukee Bucks. They are traveling to Detroit to take on the Detroit Pistons. A free-falling Detroit Pistons, as they prefer to be known. Now, the Pistons are somehow favored by 1.5. That seems a ludicrous line. I would be smashing Milwaukee in the with the spread there and probably losing, but that's the way I'd be going. Maybe we might be getting Matthew Dellavedova back, which is probably just going to take all of Jason Terry's minutes, and not really a huge DFS impact there. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe's at 7,900. Bledsoe just feels like he cranks out 40 every night, and that's great for cash. Had another 39 today, 42 average against the Pistons. Absolutely no problem. Maybe limited upside, but I like the cash reliability. Well, Ish Smith at 5,900, I'd fade him. Point guards against the Bucks do struggle, and Smith is an inconsistent type player at that salary. Dwight Bikes might be the backup again. Who knows what Van Gundy's going to do. Very little use in using him, I believe, though. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton is at 7,500. I like Middleton here. He does do well against the Pistons. He's a 35-point guy, almost as a floor, and then you've got a 40-point, 45-point upside. So I do like Middleton quite a bit here. Tone Snell, Luke Kennard, Sterling Brown, no thanks. At small forward, you got Stan Johnson or Reggie Bullock. I don't really think either of those guys are excellent DFS options, but Yanni is, of course. $11,000 for Antetokounmpo. He just dropped that that monster today, so I think that we're in pretty good stead to use him. Well, Jimmy Ennis at 36. Had a strong game in the last one, Ennis, but I don't want to put my money there. Jabari Parker. I think there's a chance that Parker sits this one out as a back-to-back. We don't know that for sure just yet, but he could definitely be out. So that's going to take him out of the discussion if that is in fact the case, which we don't know 100%. Blake Griffin, 7,600. Blake has been poor. I'd be okay throwing him into a tournament, but really nothing too much more than that. The Muppet, 5,900, no way, not the way things are currently going. Same as Tone Tolliver, not interested. At center, Andre Drummond, 10,300. I really like the matchup for Drummond here. He's been cranking out numbers even as Griffin's been struggling, had 62 in his last matchup. You know, getting a 50 out of Drummond doesn't feel like it's an overly ambitious... It's not an overly ambitious thing to expect, I guess, is the best way of me phrasing that. And then you can get Drummo in as an option. We're not looking at McCurr or Zeller quite clearly. Let's go on to DraftKings now. Let's take a look. I like Antetokounmpo at 10.5. Drummo's at 9.6. I really like that for Drummond. Love Chris Middleton at 67. The Muppet at 47. That's a bit more value there for Henton just because of that lower price. Jabari at 46 again looks really appealing, but the odds of him playing seem to be not working necessarily in his or our favor. The Raptors and the Magic is the next game. The Raptors are favored by 9.5, so real chance for a blowout and for bench minutes here. Aaron Gordon is listed as questionable with his hip being sore, while John Isaac is probable to return finally after that ankle issue. If Gordon sits out, we know that Mario Hezonja is going to be that guy, so it's a me becomes a guy that you can take a look at. He is down at 4,800, so he could be a really, really interesting tournament guy, especially if Gordon's status isn't known at tip. Or at lock, sorry. At point guard, Freddie VanVleet's at 4,900. Struggled a little bit in the last one, but there is a blowout potential here, so he's an interesting GPP option. I'd be fading Kyle Lowry at 82. I want nothing to do with that, despite the fact that point guards against the Magic go off. Yeah, he could very comfortably play only 24, 25 minutes in this game. That's a realistic scenario. DeLon Wright at 44. Yeah, probably not. Well, DJ Augustin. Which DJ do we get? Do we get good DJ? Do we get bad DJ? He's at 5,500 here, Augustin. He had 32 in that last game. I wouldn't want absolutely nothing to do with him in cash. But if Gordon is out, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable in using DJ, and I'd lean more towards him in tournaments. DeMar DeRozan at 86, same story as Lowry, while Evan Fournier at 59. I actually think for 59 for Fournier in cash is definitely a decent option. Small forward, John Simmons at 51. He went bananas in that last game, 40 points in 36 minutes. 5,100 is not a big amount for Simo. It's a tough matchup, but I do think that he has GPP worthiness. Hezonja, I've already touched on, and CJ Miles, minimum salary. Yeah, no care factor there. As Gordon's at 76, probably leave him alone with the sore hip. Pascal Siakam had a big game in that last one. I'm not sure that expecting that out of him is realistic. Bismack Biyombo, minimum salary, we nothing to do with that. Well, Serge Ibaka at 6,200. Serge is putting up the numbers. He's averaging 32 over the last five and 37 over the last three, but do we get 29-minute Serge? Do we get 24-minute Serge? I think that Serge is a GPP guy here, Ibaka, but not much more. Nick Vucevic, I do like a lot here. 7,800 for Vuc. 41-point average against the Raptors the last three games. He hasn't missed a beat since returning from his broken hand. Totally fine to use him. Well, Jonas Valanciunas at 6,400. Yeah, JV has done quite well against the Magic in the past as well. I think that price is probably just a little bit prohibitive, though. On DraftKings, Valanciunas at 58, that's a more reasonable price tag, still more GPP there, whereas I love Fournier at 53, love that for cash. Vooch at 76 and DeRozan at 8,000 is much more in play on DraftKings, even with that blowout risk happening. Much of the other stuff is the same. John Simmons, DJ Augustin, Serge Ibaka, the same sort of reservations and cautions that I mentioned on FanDuel apply on DraftKings also. The Charlotte Hornets and the Boston Celtics. The Hornets on a back-to-back. The Celtics are favored by 7.5, and the total is 208. Dwight said he's going to be fine to go. Mick Kidd-Gilchrist, I doubt that he plays with his hamstring strain, while Cody Zeller is questionable with that knee problem from today. If Zeller is out, we get more minutes for Frank, more minutes for Marv, some minutes for Bill Hernan Gomez as well, but nothing that really gets as exciting. Maybe Marv Williams gets a bit of a boost there, and of course, Jez Lamb with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist out is in a nice spot. Daniel Vanilla Tice is probable with hamstring soreness. He's been quite good recently, but I'm not overly keen on him going up against Dwight Howard. At point guard, Rozier's at 4,000. That's a pretty strong fade for me, while Kyrie at 8,600. Despite the fact that it is Kemba Walker as the point guard for Charlotte, they have been a negative for opposition point guards recently, and that price for Kyrie is probably just a little bit too high, and I think I'd leave that alone. Kemba at 8,200 has a level of value, but of course the Celtics have been very good against point guards all season, so probably going to fade both these point guards here. At shooting guard, Jalen's at 5,200. At this point, I'm only looking at him as a tournament guy, while Marcus Smart at 48, I think you only have to consider him for GPPs also. Neither of those are super strong. 7,000 for Nick Batum, crushed it today against the Bulls. The Celtics is a little bit of a different story, but I don't hate this for Batum. I think you can get away with using him in cash. Jez Lamb at 44, I love it. Probably the pick of the day on FanDuel and DraftKings as well. Only 4,400. This is assuming that Kidd-Gilchrist doesn't play, which on a back-to-back with a hamstring strain, I think it's fairly good chance to say that. Marv Williams also at 3,900, with Kidd-Gilchrist likely not playing, Cody Zeller in doubt, Dwight dealing with issues, the front court's going to shuffle around a bit. I think Marv at under 4,000 is a strong option to get some other high-profile players in. Vanilla Tice at 3,900. Some real big games from him lately, averaging 28 over the last three. He had 28 in his last game, even with Bainesy back. I don't really think that this is a great play to use, but the matchup is such a super positive one against the Hornets that you do have to consider that for Ticey. Frank the Tank at 4,400, not really. Dwight at 8,100 has been playing very well, we know that. I don't hate using Dwight for cash. Well, Al Horford's got a tough matchup against Howard, but he is at 6,500, and despite Dwight being a tough matchup, the Hornets have allowed, you know, positive performances from opposition centers. We even saw Chris Felicio have a bloody good game today, and that's a real rarity. So 6,500 for Al. I don't think his ownership's going to be very high. I think it's an interesting spot to consider him, but really more of that as a tournament type scenario. On DraftKings, Kyrie at 8-2. I think that works a little bit more in his favor, especially with the 3-point scoring bonus. Al Horford at 6-3. Again, I think there's great value there to use him in a tournament. Well, Jez Lamb at 45, as I touched on, some pretty nice numbers coming his way. Jason Tatum, not interested. Jaylen Brown, not really either. Kemba at 78. It's a little bit more appealing than, say, on FanDuel, but it's definitely not one that's getting my interest totally revved up. The Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pacers are favored by 5, and the total is 211.5 points. Malcolm Delaney is questionable for the Hornets, so that if he is out, then you're going to get some more Isaiah Taylor minutes. At point guard, Corey Joseph, 5,100. He is hit or miss. Tournament guy with limited upside, yeah, not really super appealing. Well, Dennis Schroeder at 7,000. The minutes are down for Schroeder, averaging only 29 minutes per game over the last five. That is a concern. The Pacers' point guard defense is a concern, so I think Schroeder remains a fade here. Tyler Dorsey, no. Isaiah Taylor at 3,800. If Delaney is out, I think I would put him into a tournament pool, but wouldn't make him a high priority player. Vic Oladipo at 10,000. He had foul trouble against the Mavs, still dropped 36 points in 23 minutes. At 10,000 against this team, we're talking, you know, the ability for him to get to 60 here, so I like him in both cash and tournaments. Bazemore at 58 is probably too high. Don't really love what Bazemore does, as you're probably well aware. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he had 40 in the last game, and he's at 5,200. Actually playing quite well recently. More of a GPP guy than a tournament guy, than a cash guy, obviously. Well, the little dog Glenn Robinson is back. He's playing okay, but not really going to interest us too much. Bojan Bogdanovic, Lance Stevenson, no. Power forward, the Baptist, 6,500 for Johnny Collins. Foul trouble in the last game, been a bit up and down. I want nothing to do with that for cash, but I do think that you can always consider him for tournaments. I just wouldn't be considering it too strongly here. Well, Thaddeus Young's at 6,300. He has been fairly consistent with a relatively solid floor in a really good positive matchup. No problem with using Thad in a cash scenario. Don't want Sabonis, though. The Undertaker, 5,500 for Dwayne Dedman. Probably not. Mike Muscala, 4,000. Probably not as well. And Miles Turner just went off against Dallas. This is a great opportunity for centers. They always tend to do well against the Hawks. So Turner at 7,000 is good. We know his inconsistency, and that makes him hard to use as a cash guy. But the upside is absolutely in his favor as a tournament player. On DraftKings, Oladipo at 9,000 is sensational. Love that. The Baptist at 6,1 is more appealing, but still not really to lock in there. Well, Schroeder at 6,600. I think people will fade away from Schroeder, and I do think that is a tournament option. If for some reason he plays 32 minutes, he could very easily get you 40. But I'm still not feeling super confident about that. The Undertaker at 51, yeah, probably not going to be interested in that either. Let's move on to the next game. We have got the Phoenix Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies. Tyson Chandler doubtful again, so we're going to get Alex Len starting. He was shitful in the last game. 8 points in 21 minutes for Len in that game. Hopefully we can expect things to be a little bit better in this one. There's no Tyreek, there's no Wayne Seldon, there's no Chandler Parsons for the Grizzlies. There's no Deontay Davis either, so it's obviously some opportunities opening up. At point guard, Andy Harrison's at 6,000. I feel good about Harrison. And again, it's real weird to say. Harrison, great matchup, in a good position, great ease, great opposition. I love him at 6,000 here. I think this is a really solid opportunity to use him. While Lord Alfred Payton going the other way, yeah, 7,300. I'm in on that as well against this Memphis team. Chalmers and Kobe Simmons, I don't think we need to care too much about. At shooting guard, we've got Devin Booker at 8,700. He is just cranking out numbers all the time. 8,700 might be a little bit too high in a lower pace sort of game, but I don't think that you can totally rule out Dev at this stage. Benny McLemore, Mike Henry, Shaq Harrison, well, you can rule those guys out. At small forward, Dylan Brooksy Brooks, no. Joshy Jackson at 5,100. He is definitely taking a lot of shots. Someone disagreed with me on the podcast yesterday when I said I didn't like what I've seen from Jackson on the court. And yeah, you know what? He's rebounded better. He's athletic. I just think that he makes some absolutely piss poor decisions, some terrible shot selection. It has improved slightly, but I still am not convinced that he is a star of the future or even a very good starter. Just some weird out of control shit I've seen from him pretty much all of this season. Yeah, he's athletic. That's great. Marquise Chris does some athletic stuff as well, but he is one of the worst players in the NBA. And I don't think Jackson's quite at that level, but he has been unplayable for stretches of this season and has been piss poor for other stretches. He's had some good moments too, but he jacks up some just terrible shots, and that's part of the reason why I'm not high on him as a prospect. But in saying that, he's just getting as much opportunity as he can to do whatever he wants, and at 5,100, that's why I like him in this matchup. Tony Warren Jr. is at 7,100. He is cranking out the numbers. 40-point average over the last three. I still don't love it, though, for DFS. I think there's bust potential and limited upside, and they're two things you don't want to hear together. Marquise Chris and Dragon Bender, I don't think we want to really use them. Bender was good in the last game, had 26 points, but that's just unreliable. The Grizzlies power forwards become interesting. Jarrell Martin at 4,100. He's going to get 30-plus minutes here. Now, he has struggled a little bit in the past games, but I think he's absolutely worth using in a great matchup. Jermichael Green at 5,300, getting these extra minutes in a scenario with Parsons, Seldon, Evans out, and Green and Martin are starting at the 3 and the 4. Absolutely, 5,300. I don't like Green that much, but this is a great opportunity for him. Ivan Raab at 3,800. Will he get some backup center minutes with Deontay Davis out? That's a possibility. You could throw him into a tournament. I probably wouldn't, but he did have a 30-point game earlier this season. So someone who could be a weird tournament winner. At center, Marc Gasol, 7,200. I like Gasol here. He had 43 in that last game against Boston. He's still cranking out numbers. I like using him here. While Len at 4,900. You got Alex Len's inconsistency. You've got a matchup with Marc Gasol, but that price is really appealing. So I do like using Len, but be prepared to be burnt. That should be, I think Alex Len's got that tattooed across his neck. Be prepared to be burnt, all you DFS people. On DraftKings, yeah, I love a lot of guys here. Green at 54, Jermichael, Andy Harrison at 57, Jarrell Martin at 44, Lord Alfred at 71. Yeah, Gasol's probably priced a little bit high up on DraftKings at 84 and Booker at 86. Yeah, it's still pretty high, but I like Booker quite a bit there. While Joshie Jackson at 56, that extra pricing there doesn't make him as appealing as what he is over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next one. We've got the Golden State Warriors and the Washington Wizards. The Warriors are favored by 9 on the road. The Wizards on a back-to-back. The total is 226.5, the largest total of the day so far. At point guard, Steph, 9,300. You know what to do. It's absolutely fine to use Steph Curry in that sort of a scenario. Tomas Satoransky, hate that salary, 6,900 for Satoransky. We've seen point guards go off against the Warriors many times this year, including Manuel Mudiay in the last game. So there's something there, but that price is just too high for me for Tomas. Timmy Frazier at minimum salary, Shawnee Livingston at minimum for a significant reason. Bradles Beal, 8,500. I got no issue with that. I think that's a good cash play. I think it's a strong tournament play as well. While Klay Thompson finally had a good game in that last one, he's at 6,700. I just don't want anything to do with him in DFS this season. At small forward, Oubre's at 5,000. I think there's a chance he bounces back after a disappointing performance, so I'm okay with using him. Otto Porter at 7.2, I'm in on. And Durant at 9.8, I am super in on. I think both Porter and Durant can have value-exceeding games. At power forward, Draymond Green's at 7,600. I like Draymond quite a bit here. This is a good matchup for him against Markieff Morris. He's got a good record against the Wizards, averaging 40 points in the last three games in only 31 minutes. Yeah, this has got 50-point upside written all over it, while Markieff at 55, he had a good game today. So according to the scriptures, that means that he must shit the bed in this one and get into early foul trouble. Let's wait and see if it happens. Jordy Bell, minimum salary. Decent return to action, 12 points in 13 minutes, but I don't think he's really exceeding 20 points or 20 minutes here. At center, Marcin Gortat, JaVale McGee, Jan Mihinmi, Zaza Pachulia. I wouldn't want anything to do with any of those guys. On DraftKings, I love Durant at 9.7. Curry at 9.5 is good. Beal, maybe a little bit high at 88, but still got some value. Draymond and Porter are good. Oubre with that upside there also. Very, very similar type scenarios on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel. But really love Durant at 9,700. Let's move on to the next game now. The New Orleans Anthony Davises and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 4.5 and the total is 219.5 points. Pau Gasol is doubtful. Also an update on Kawhi Leonard. He's looking to be back around the 12th of March, around that time. So that's obviously good to get some sort of a time frame. We still don't know if there's going to be restrictions or back-to-backs or anything like that. But of course, that earlier timetable, when it could have been the 31st and looking at the 12th, does make things a lot more palatable in terms of adding him. No Pau likely in this one. So there's a couple of ways that the Spurs can go. Do they start Davis Bertans again and push Aldridge across to the five to match up against Emeka Okafor and Anthony Davis? Could get ugly. Or do they throw Joffrey Laverne out there? I think if they had to go anyway, they might go Laverne. Bertans is pretty much out of the rotation. That could easily change. He's going to have to be in the rotation in this one. But I don't think that we want to use either of those guys in this matchup outside of weird tournament flyers. I like DeJounte Murray a lot here, 6,800. He had a monster in that last game. I think he's in a strong spot again. While Rajon Rondo at 5,800, he's getting some decent, consistent numbers recently. I don't know if that'll continue. I wouldn't want to use him in cash, but there's a little bit there. Pat Mills, will he start again at shooting guard? He's at 4,700. He's listed as a point guard, but he did start at shooting guard. I think he's an interesting GPP sort of a target, while Ian Clark and Tone Parker don't really warrant me mentioning them. At shooting guard, Dan Green had a monster in his last game. That is unsustainable, so don't read into that too much. Manu is back at 4,100, no. Or Drew Holiday at 8,000. Against any other opponent, I'd be all in on Drew. Against the Spurs, I'll say, you know what, that's probably fade time. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 5,700. He's a guy that gets you about that number most nights, doesn't often exceed it. It's a good matchup, absolutely fine for cash, probably limited tournament upside. No interest in Rudy Gay or Etuan Moore. At power forward, Aldridge at 8,700. much like the guys for the Pelicans playing the Spurs, if Aldridge was against any other team, I'd be okay with it. But going up against Davis, that can lead your bigs into some trouble. And Aldridge has struggled against the Pels in the past, averaging just 33 across his last three meetings. So I think that he is in fade territory there, while Bertans at 41 again. Bit of an upside play for GPPs. While Mirotic only played 25 minutes in the last game, still went at over a point per minute. But at $7,000, I need him playing 30 minutes, so I'm not really keen there. Tone Davis, what do we do here? This guy is just crushing everything, averaging 82 over his last three games. He is at $12,500. I think we're getting to the stage where we probably have to fade him just because of that exorbitant salary and the Spurs matchup. But it's almost impossible for me to suggest that just because of how well he's playing. You feel like that Russell Westbrook stretch where you just had to ride him every single day, and it feels very similar here for Tone Davis. Emeka Okafor at 4,200, putting up some okay numbers, actually. Okafor, limited upside, low ceiling, so fade for me. While Joffrey Laverne at 41, yeah, there's that marginal upside, I guess, if he does get the start and play the 25 minutes, which is a possibility. We've seen that happen before. On DraftKings, I like DeJounte at 6,000 quite a lot. LaMarcus at 8,100, I think that's in a much better spot on DraftKings, but still more tournament-y, while Pat Mills at 44 has that upside there too for a tournament play. Davis at 11.7, really hard to go past that on DraftKings. I think it's a good price. While Mirotic at 6.5, again, more tournament-y, but I think there are going to be better options out there on the board. Let's go on to the next game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. The Thunder are favored by 5.5 on the road. The total is 214 points here. At point guard, Kevin Ferrell's at 4,300. I have very little interest in that. Dennis Smith Jr. is at $6,000. He's more of a $5,500 guy at the moment. If you're going to use him, I'd only make it a tournament. Well, Russ at 11.6, all about Russ at 11.6. This is shaping up as a 60-pointer for Westbrook here. Ray Felton was good in the last game. Don't expect that again. Alex Abrines at 36 as a shooting guard. Strong game from him last time out, but very little upside there. Wes Matthews at 47. I think you can do better. At small forward, we've got the pencil Harrison Barnes at 5,900. I think that's absolutely fine for cash. Not sure if he's actually got upside to go better than that in tournaments, but I feel good about a sub 6,000 Harrison Barnes. For cash, while Paulie George is it 8,700? That is really, really pushing it in terms of salary, so I think I would leave him alone. Josh Eustace, Doug McDirt, no. Power forward, Mello is down to 5,800. I think that he is worth a look in a GPP. He has not been good, averaging only 27 over the last five, but 27 at 5,800 is not bad. It's not a disaster, and he does have the 35-40-point game in him still. Dwight Powell at 5,200. I don't care if he starts. I don't care if he comes off the bench. He's pretty much going to give you 25 or 26. So that's a strong cash play. I didn't talk about Jose Juan Barea, who's at 6,500, who keeps churning out the numbers, but that's a $700 FanDuel price rise. So I cannot get behind him at that sort of a salary. Dirk at 5,400. I just don't see it for him. Jeremy Grant, no. At center, Nerlens Noel is going to be returning to action. He is at minimum salary. Sure, throw him into a tournament. There is almost zero chance he's out there playing 27 minutes, but he could have a 20-minute role. It's a possibility. I don't think it will happen, but it's a possibility. Steve-O Adams at 7,600. It feels like that price is right about where it needs to be, cutting out a lot of upside potential for him. He's a guy that could be a 36, 37-point guy. In fact, he's averaging 38 over his last five, and that would be fine at that price. I feel there's limited upside with a little bit of a shaky floor. He can be a little bit inconsistent at times. On DraftKings, Westbrook 11.3 is great. Adams at 6.8, much better. And Barea at 5.8, I'm all about that. Paulie George even more in play on DraftKings at 8,500, while Smith Jr. at 5,800 is an upside sort of a guy there also. Dwighty Powell at 56 maybe pushes him away from being a guy I'd want to use in cash, unlike the way he is on FanDuel. Let's go on to the last game of the night now. We've got the Houston Rockets and the LA Clippers. The Rockets are without Ryan Anderson. Eric Gordon is not on the injury report, and Clint Capella is questionable. Brandon Wright is also out. So if Capella is out, we'll be looking at Tariq Black and Nene starting again, and more minutes for Mamute and PJ Tucker in that scenario. At point guard, Austin Rivers is at 5,800. I actually like Rivers here. Didn't play too many minutes in today's game. I think that's fine to use him for cash. Chrissy Paul's at 8,400 against his former team. He had 39 the last time. will he be spurred into action back in Staples Center? My thoughts on revenge games. 8,400 for Chris. I think he's a GPP guy just because point guards have done very, very well against the Clippers recently. At shooting guard, Ty Wallace, the list manager, 4,500. Absolutely no worries with using him. Love that in cash. Think there's value there. Love Lou Williams at 77 and Jim Harden at 11,200. All of those guys are great shooting guard options. Eric Gordon at 45, I think you can do much better, much like the other three shooting guards in this game. At small forward, Ariza at 4,700 has been bad since returning. That's really just a tournament guy, but I'm not super interested in it. Wes Johnson, no thanks. When PJ Tucker at 3,600. We're also assuming that the Rooster is out. He said he doesn't think he's going to be playing against Houston. PJ Tucker's not an interesting DFS option. The table Montrezl Harrell is at 4,500. I actually don't hate using that. I think there is some GPP value there. In fact, he's averaging 22 over the last five, but that salary at 45 takes away that sneaky cash value there. But I think you can have a look at Harrell, especially if Gallinari is out. At center, DeAndre Jordan's at 84. I think I'd fade him in this matchup. That's just too high of a price. He's more of a 36-point guy rather than a 43-point guy, which is what you'd want him to be at. While Capella at 7,700, I don't think I'd be using him coming back off the illness that kept him out last game, if he even plays. Well, Nene or Tariq Black, I think they would be GPP guys at best. On DraftKings, Harden we love, of course, at 11,900. Chris Paul at 8,300 is also a good play. Toby Harris at 77, not really interested. I love Austin Rivers again. Trevor Ariza for a tournament play. And Ty Wallace at 47 has some definite upside there also. All right, let's just wrap up this with looking at some other DFS providers. On Yahoo, for tournaments, I like Aldridge, I like DeJounte Murray, the Baptist, Jermichael Green, Kelly Oubre, Fred Van Vliet, the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, DJ Augustin, Davis Bertans, and Frank the Tank Kaminsky. For cash, it's the table, Montrezl Harrell, Reggie Bullock, Pat Mills, Jarrell Martin, Jez Lamb, JJ Barea, Andy Harrison, Gasol, Marc Gasol, that is, DeMar DeRozan, Bradley Beal, Andre Drummond, Oladipo, Harden, Davis, Yanni, and Russell Westbrook. On Moneyball, for tournament plays, Mallo, Joshy Jackson, Trevor Ariza, formerly, and for cash and tournament options, we've got Pat Mills, Jarrell Martin, The Pencil, Kyle Anderson, Jeremy Lamb, Barea, Jermichael Green, Andy Harrison, Alfred Payton, DeJounte Murray, Nick Vucevic, Marc Gasol, Oladipo, Adetokunbo, Anthony Davis, Jim Harden, and Russell Westbrook. And on Draft Stars to round things out, four tournaments, the Baptist and Jonas Valanciunas, almost called him Jonas, Alex Len, Ivan Rabb, Little Dog Glenn Robinson III, Isaiah Taylor. For cash, I like Emeka Okafor, Dwight Powell, Patty Mills, Jarrell Martin, Jez Lamb, Andy Harrison, Jermichael Green, Barea, Steve Adams, Alfred Payton, DeJounte Murray, Devin Booker, Nick Vucevic, Marc Gasol, LaMarcus Aldridge, Victor Oladipo, Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jim Harden, and Russell Westbrook. That brings us to an end of another Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. If you're unaware, my name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com, and you can go catch me on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. Check out the rest of the Locked On podcast network, including Locked On Clippers, where you can hear all about Boban Mania from Lucas Hand today. Check us out on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. If you do like this podcast, go and leave a 5-star ranking and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can also find the show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course, YouTube, where you can see my beautiful face. You can give me a thumbs up, you can subscribe, and you can leave a comment. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Reggie Bullock.